going to work.
Okay. I'd like to thank everybody for the patience while we had a bit of a technical issue. I think we'll start with the introductions again. Myself, Alan Black, product manager for Komatsu Mining Corporation, for power drill support. To my right, we have Lauren, who was the maintenance manager for New Denmark Colliery. And then to his right, we've got Jamie, who was the reliability manager, again, at New Denmark. So just as a little bit of an introduction, I'm picking up on the second presentation. Tate made a couple of valid points. We as a company, we understand that coal producers are under financial pressure. Obviously, you'll have picked up from my accent, I'm from the UK. The last UK coal mine closed in 2015. Germany, the last coal mine closed in 2018. You know, and other places around the world, we see Australia, even with their traditional low operating costs, we'll still see a lot of activity, but not a lot of that translates into orders. And even China, we've seen them rein back on production. So we understand the dynamics of the industry. Looking a little bit closer to home, you know, and sort of more pertinent to the US, we can see from 2015, the number of long walls has been reducing, and that reduction in long walls has actually increased. We're running at a fairly constant sort of 48, might be one more, might be one less on particular years, but that now is reduced to 45, and then down to 43 long walls. Let me just clear that. Okay. With these financial constraints, we see companies having to reduce capital expenditure, and obviously the knock-on effects that has on major projects. We see a reduction in cost, and we also see productivity needing to increase. So with all these things happening in the background, you know, we need other solutions. And one solution is how to get more out of your core asset. If you just take 10 seconds and have a think, what makes a successful longwall? I don't particularly want any answers, but here's some of my suggestions. These are sort of the benchmarks and the performance indicators that we tend to use as an industry, whether that's tons out the mine, whether it's machine availability, operating hours per week, meters retreated, or cost per ton, or even cost per gigajoule. But I'd like to suggest there's another metric that we don't tend to use that often and possibly gets overlooked, and that's about managing the asset. And there's three main components on any longwall system. For the shearer, it's quite easy. It's about managing the reliability. For the AFC, it's about understanding the product and managing the wear. For power roof support, it's a little different. It's about managing and achieving the longevity out of that support. So to help a customer achieve this longevity, we need to have infrastructure in place. And again, on some of the previous presentations, you know, we talked about where these test centres are. Talking for me, for my own company, Komatsu, our test facility is based in the northwest of England, just outside of Manchester, and it's a purpose-built facility that houses all the design test engineers, all the test equipment. So all the expertise is under that one roof. So it's an ideal place to carry out these sort of tests. Moving on to extended life testing, and trying to explain what the process is. It's really a process that we use to evaluate the longevity of the power roof support structures. And because of its very nature, it's almost a predictive tool. It can determine when individual components are likely to reach the end of their serviceable life. And as a process, we can realise between possibly 15 and 30,000 cycles out of a given roof support. Obviously, that's dependent on the environment and the operational loading that support has seen in its service, in its life. And because you can achieve these extra cycles, you're effectively pushing any capital expenditure, possibly 5 to 7 years into the future. So it's a powerful tool, it's a powerful means of getting more out of your equipment. To gain a detailed knowledge of the current structural competency of a support, we actually take a unit out of service, and then we strip and fully evaluate that unit in our facility, and from these results it gives us a baseline, and that baseline is representative of the conditions that that support has operated in underground. So it actually captures all the any corrosion issues, any heavy loading, any weighting. It gives us a real good baseline to work to. From that baseline, we develop a test schedule, and this is a bespoke test schedule that the engineers can critique and fine-tune to best replicate the support as it is supplied to us. And then we test the support up to that number of cycles. So we're actually putting cycles into the support that replicate the support as it's been presented to us. So it's really accurate. It's a really close method of simulating those actual cycles underground. The good thing in all this is what the customer gets out of the process. He gets some confidence out of the longevity in his supports going forward. The information feeds into a life cycle management plan, and also includes any spare parts that are needed, or any major repairs or minor repairs that are needed to keep those support structures in their best condition. Because we actually test two cycles that the support's going to see underground, we can predict when components are likely to reach the end of their serviceable life, as you'll see in the example that we get to later. And that allows mines, with that knowledge, to plan the maintenance budgets to a high level of accuracy, and also to be able to phase them into face moves, rather than getting a lot of work to do, you know, at a particular point in time. If you know that you've got a given amount of number of cycles left in a support, then you can actually phase that through a number of years. So again, it's not such a big hit on the capital expenditure of the mine. And also in all this process, it gives the customer an option to take the latest upgrades and features. So if we just take a quick overview of the piled roof supports as they were supplied to New Denmark. There were a 1,250 tonne support, or 1,378 in US short tonnes, supplied in 2009. 1.75 metre wide units, 400mm legs, 200mm stab ram, 150mm DA ram, with an open and closed height of 53 to 98 inches. So not really dissimilar to a lot of the criteria that we see in the US mines. The supports were originally tested to 30,000 cycles, and that was at a 100% amplitude. I'll touch a little bit on test cycles a little bit later, just to give people an idea on how there are subtle differences. Just go back one. And this, the photo you can see in the bottom is one of the supports on its way to the dock. This is our Worcester facility. That support then was loaded with the rest and transported some 8,500 miles to South Africa. The reason I've included this slide is not particularly showing the journey of the support going to South Africa. It's just to demonstrate the journey it made back to the UK. And you know, we do live in a global society now. Things do get moved around the world. And distance is really no barrier to using the OEM, you know, and taking some equipment back and putting it back in front of the design engineers and the team that critiqued it and did all the FA analysis and all that sort of good stuff. Just looking at the rest of the phase layout, it was part of a package. There were a total of 137 piled roof supports supplied to New Denmark, which gives him a face width of 230 metres. So that's a little bit narrower than what you're used to in the US. That equates to probably 754 feet, something like that. And because of the geology in South Africa, the face runs tend to be quite short as well. So 800, 1,000 metre, 1,200 metre of retreat is not unusual. So these guys have to run fast just to stand still, you know, doing phase changes and getting the equipment moved from one block to another. And just for completeness, as I said, it was part of a package. It was supplied with a 7LS 2A shearer and a 2,500 ton per hour AFC with a single main gate and a tailgate drive. Just moving back to specifications, and we haven't really got time in the presentation today to go through all the different sort of finite differences from region to region and company to company. But in this slide, I've just tried to capture to give people an understanding that not all test specifications are the same. As a company, we obviously supply into the European Union. They have a standard EN 1804, which is the Euro norm. In Russia, they have a GOS standard. China have a regional standard, MA. But what we also find as well, a lot of the more mature mining companies will have their own test specification. And that can be in place of or in addition to the regional standard. And for this particular support, the test standard was 15,000 cycles without any test-induced cracks, and that was followed by a second 15,000 cycles with allowable cracks, but to a very strict tolerance. And just to give you some sort of an idea on what that looks like, if we were to rate these on a 1 to 10 sort of scale, from easy to difficult, you know, as what we see as an OEM, then this test standard is about an 8. You know, so it's up there. It's quite a difficult standard to meet. Okay, so just sort of moving on now to an overview of New Denmark. I'm going to hand you over to Lawrence, just to give you a bit of an overview on the mine, its layout, production, and that sort of stuff, just to give you an idea of where the equipment has been working.
Thank you, Alan. Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. New Denmark Colliery is situated in the Mpumalanga province of South Africa, approximately an hour and a half's drive in a southeasterly direction from Johannesburg. There we go. New Denmark is the only mine in South Africa that operates a long wall. There is, however, another mine that operates a short wall, but in long wall terms, it's only New Denmark. The mine was established in 1982 to provide coal to the Eskom, South Africa's power facility, which is Eskom. We are mining the number 4 seam at an average depth of below plus minus 200 meters below surface. And the average seam height is roughly 1.85 to 2 meters. The original contract with Eskom was to provide 10.05 million tons per annum of coal to the power station, and in the total life of the contract was to provide 433.5 million tons to the power station. And this production output was based on 2 long walls, 2 short walls, and 14 continuous miner sections. Then in 2001, the demand for electricity reduced, and the requirements from the mine was then to produce 3.75 million tons per annum. And subsequent to that, the North Shaft complex was mothballed. However, in 2006, again, the demand for electricity increased again, and we then had to produce between 4 to 4.5 million tons of coal to Eskom's power station. In 2010, Eskom decided to extend the power station's life up to 2049, which will then take it up to a 60-year period. Currently, our output is 3.2 million tons, or that was for last year rather, and we are building that up eventually to 5 million tons by next year. The longwall at the current setup is planned to be stopped in 2020, and then the continuous miners will basically produce up until 2030. New Denmark exists out of 3 shafts, which is the central shaft complex, which houses 4 continuous miners, of which 2 of them are double header sections, and then there is 1 development section. Then there's the Okazini shaft complex, which we are in the process of closing down, which only has one continuous miner section. Then there's the North Shaft complex, which has two CM sections, which is the development sections or the chain roads for the longwall, and then also the longwall section there. The shafts, this is a plan of the mine. There we have Central Shaft. There's the Okazini shaft complex, which we are in the process of closing down, because as you can see, the majority of the resources have been mined out there. And then the North Shaft complex is there. With basically the future of the mine being in this area here and to the north there, and which is the reason why Alan is doing all this research and this project. Okay, on North Shaft, currently we are mining that panel there with the longwall, the dark blue panel, and we are about to move over to the next panel there, and from there these will be mined out. Then we're going to move those areas and then over to this big area here. We have continuous miners developing this area here for the longwall as well. Okay, brief overview. Average sea might 1.85. Our average CV of the coal is roughly 22.8 megajoules per kilogram. Keep in mind this is unwashed coal. It is just crushed and then sent off to the power station. The average ash runs around 27.6%, and then the abrasive index is roughly 649 milligrams iron per kilogram of coal. Then the mining methods, we have the two double-header sections at the Central Shaft complex, which is a new concept to continuous miners in South Africa, of which the first section, this Shaw-Seloza, have been implemented in August of last year and is doing very well. And then the second section, Simunye section, that was implemented in March this year, and they're also performing quite well. Then we have three single-header sections, and that exists of two chain roads for the longwall and one multi-road. And then we also have the longwall for total extraction. Thank you.
Okay, so moving on to the case study. Again, as we said, the supports were supplied in 2009 and were tested up to 30,000 cycles. There was a requirement due to the mining plan that Lawrence has just taken you through to extend the supports life up to 45,000 cycles. Now, the supports had seen some 13,000 underground cycles when they were presented to us in some pretty tough conditions, to say the least. From a preliminary inspection, we start to get an idea on what issues the supports have seen. I mean, just looking at the top right-hand picture, you can see there's been some heavy loading at the back of the canopy, and we're starting to see some dishing in that area. The legs, the leg plating was good, but obviously on the steel items, you can start to see a bit of corrosion due to the water and the corrosive nature of the water that these supports were working in. But then obviously start the process of dismantling the units. In these photos, the canopy has been removed, and obviously at every stage we start to open up more of the support, and we can start to see some of the issues that aren't visible initially. The pins and boards we can start to examine. We can get into the leg pockets and get a better idea of where any damage or any issues exist. During this process, any cracks or damage are identified and are given a unique identification number. And the reason we do this at this stage, prior to NDT testing, is so that if we find anything of such a significant nature, then we can advise the mine that we've found an issue and this will be visible, you know, to the naked eye, and you can actually check for it in an underground environment. Once the support's completely disassembled, we then fully shot blast the support, and with the addition of magnetic particle NDT testing, we check all the welds. And again, because this unit's in the centre of excellence in Manchester, We've got all the people there that understand all the high stress areas. They know which areas to look for around the tows, around the bridge, you know, so the support gets a really good going over. And again, you can see where some of the lesser cracks are starting to be identified. This is the bays, this is the canopy. Again, it's upside down this time, but you can see the dishing on the underside of the canopy. Again, you could ask the question, why would you NDT that when obviously there is some plate separation there? And this wasn't constitute any structural failure. But with the NDT testing, you can monitor whether there's any propagation of those cracks to a really finite sort of level. Okay. And again, moving on to the pins and the bores. As the OEM, we have all the historic data for these supports, so we know how they were supplied. We've got the nominal diameters of the pins, we've got the nominal diameter of the boards. We can compare how it was supplied with how it's been returned to us, and then we can determine what sort of wear it's had, which pins have worn, and we can determine a course of action on the back of that information. So, as we talked about earlier, from these results, a unique test program was agreed with the new Denmark guys that best replicated the load cases as we determined through the inspection, and a test schedule was developed. And basically, the test schedule consisted of a phase one and a phase two. Phase one was 2,000 cycles to take the support up to a total of 15, including the underground cycles, and phase two to five were each of 7,500, giving you the total of 45. And then there were two complete strip downs and examinations in there after phase three and after phase five. It's also important as well that we agree with the customer what the failure criteria would be, or what the definition for a failure criteria would be. And for this particular support, it was a sudden acceleration of a crack propagation rate, parent metal failure, such that a repair or any salvage work would be inappropriate, or any loss of the prime function, so that the support would not be able to sustain any load. So we commenced the testing, and the testing was going very well. We completed phase one, which took the support to 15,000 cycles. We completed phase two and three, and we then stripped and examined the support, and there were no significant issues found or detected in any of the wells. So we started testing to phase four. And during phase four at 19,000 cycles, they were the test cycles, so given a total of 32, including the one seen underground, we had a catastrophic failure of the lower links, rear links, and the test had to be suspended. Obviously, you can see in the photo the nature of the failure. It's quite significant, the location as well, because you would not be able to see these failures if the supports were in situ. So this is a sort of failure you want to happen in a controlled environment, so you can get round the support, you can examine it, and you can come up with a proper structured plan. You don't want a failure actually in situ on a coal face. The decision was made in conjunction with these guys to replace the lower links, and the test resumed, and we completed phase four and phase five without a problem. So it demonstrated that, looking at these and going back to some of the previous slides where we had the corrosion, an element of corrosion, stress-induced cracking had taken place. It's very difficult to engineer for that at the beginning. You know, sometimes you need a snapshot through time to determine where this is taking place, dependent on mine's environment. From this, we provided the guys with a comprehensive plan. And again, we haven't got time to go through all the details, but it itemized every structural component on that support. And other than the changing out of the rear links at a given time period, these were just general checks, general examinations to make sure there was no further deterioration on less important issues that we found. So to summarise, extended life testing, it is a process to evaluate if a support can be taken past its original cycles, and those results feed into a detailed life cycle management plan. Due to its predictive nature, the life cycle management plan identifies when components will reach the end of their serviceable life and allows budgets to be developed and also phased in over a period of time. And importantly, this provides the operators with options when evaluating their equipment needs going forward, because we can extend the longevity of those units. Any questions?
Yeah, one question. So obviously you had extra supports on your face, so you didn't reuse that support after they put it through the test cycles, did you?
No, once we've carried out an extended life test, that support can no longer be put back into use. What we maintain as a facility, all the supports that we've supplied around the world, we keep the test units on the boneyard, the graveyard, at the back of the new place. So we can always pull on those supports. We can use them for any modifications, any enhancements that customers are wanting to look at. So we retain that.
So did you get enough information from this to develop a rebuild to get the rest of your life with your lawnmower?
Yes, we did, and that enabled us to formulate an action plan which will kick in place towards the end of 2019.
Okay. Got a couple more up here.
Which test case did the rear link fail on?
Phase 4. That's a total of 32,000 cycles.
You know which? Was it the waist-to-face racking?
Yes.
I had just a couple of operating questions for the new Denmark folks. On the 2020 end of longwall mining, looking at the map, I assume that's actually the end of the longwallable reserves, or are you doing an economic shutdown for other reasons?
Yes. Currently, if we do not extend the life of the longwall supports, then the contract with the longwall will end in 2020. If we do this life extension project on the supports, that will enable us to go to the panels at the North Shaft complex, and we will be able to mine that with the longwall up until 2049, when the extended contract ends.
And I misunderstood that. And on the continuous miner board and pillar, as you call it, is there pillar extraction, or are you leaving the pillars?
No, it's only board and pillar. At this stage, we do not do pillar extraction. But that is also an option that is currently being looked at.
Thank you.
Any other questions?
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thank you. Good job.
All right, this concludes this morning's session. We will reconvene back here at 2 o'clock for this afternoon.